Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, and in a moment we'll be getting the reactions of two local legislators, one Democrat, one Republican, to Governor Branstad's unexpected veto of a $56 million education funding package. After that, all kinds of excitement bust loose with a visit from our own local superstar, Harrison Barnes, hometown hero and 2015 NBA champion, will be in the house later in the hour. And with him, our own KHOI personalities and sports enthusiasts, Vivica Dillard and Merle Crabb. It's a very special day here at KHOI Studios. And a very special day in Ames, which has declared today, July 13th, the first annual Harrison Barnes Day. Harrison will be meeting with Ames community groups and residents all day today, so tune in to catch his schedule. All that later in the hour. As we often do here at Local Talk, we start the hour with a phenology report from our correspondent with the natural world, Pat Schlarbaum. Last Friday, we heard about efforts to restore monarch butterflies to central Iowa. Today, we hear Pat's take on a lesser-known but certainly just as colorful and high-ranking butterfly species, the Red Admiral.
Iowans are experiencing a mass emergence of Red Admiral butterflies in recent weeks. Their amazing black forms with intense reddish-orange and white are creating a delight along the lower roads at the Ledges State Park. And it seems that Red Admirals are abundant throughout much of Iowa. Enormous swarms have been seen in at least 8 different locations around the state. Most, if not all of them, are occurring near streams or other wet areas where the concentration of butterflies is typically highest. People visiting Ledges State Park west of Ames report butterflies entering through open car windows while traversing the water crossings of the park. On Sunday, June 28th, the huge swarm along Highway E57 west of Luther peaked at the bridge over the Des Moines River and dropped off exponentially for 2 or 3 miles on either side of the river. They seem to be concentrated in belts along rivers and become especially concentrated where the floodplain forest begins. John Pearson, ecologist with the Department of Natural Resources, witnessed an enormous swarm of Red Admirals on the afternoon of June 25th as he drove rural back roads between Council Bluffs and Glenwood in western Iowa. A thunderstorm had just ended and thousands of Red Admirals were flying above and beside the road, and many were also on the surface of the road, evidently puddling on the wet pavement and gravel. Apparently they get moisture through the pads of their feet. There were so many on the road that he slowed down his vehicle and gently shifted his course from side to side to avoid striking them. Luckily, the roads were deserted of other cars, so no humans were endangered by his mobile butterfly conservation. John reported it went on for many miles and all afternoon as thousands, jillions of butterflies were enjoyed. And at Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge near Prairie City, southeast of Ames, wildlife biologist Karen Vista Sparkman related Red Admirals were gathered on the wet gravel roads after it had rained on June 22nd. She reported it was hard to avoid hitting them as they flew up and around her vehicle. However, most do seem to allow the auto's movement to whisk them away from harm's way. There have continued to be large numbers feeding on nectar, and when the roads are wet, they again congregate at the National Prairie Refuge. These butterflies have nearly all emerged recently and had most likely fed as larvae on stinging nettles and wood nettles that are especially abundant in floodplains near the creeks and rivers. Who knew that a plant which act like hypodermic needles, injecting chemicals that produce a stinging sensation when contacted by humans, could be so valuable to butterflies? Stinging nettles also has a long history of use as a medicine for ailments that include our joints, blood, kidneys, and bladders. It is also an excellent food source and a source of fiber. But as a host of Red Admirals, its contribution to our native areas is unequaled. If the kind of outbreaks now happening in Iowa are also occurring elsewhere in other parts of North America, the Red Admiral summer generation this year could be enormous, perhaps one of the largest ever observed. So get out and enjoy a flutter of Red Admirals while they are with us. And that's our phenology for today.
And that was Pat Schlarbaum bringing us some good news from the natural world. Jillions of Red Admiral butterflies out there, so take a look. We now turn to a topic that has everyone talking, the long, drawn-out saga of K-12 education funding for the fiscal year we just started, July 1st. On July 2nd, Governor Branstad vetoed a compromise plan that the Democratic-controlled Senate and Republican-controlled House had struggled long and hard to produce. Here's Representative Beth Wessel-Crichel, a Democrat from Ames, describing the process in the legislature.
We are supposed to set the budget for education 2 years in advance, and so this was very, very late in coming. And the Senate had voted for 6% the year before for the year that's starting now, and so had House Democrats voted for 6%. But over that period of time, House Republicans stood their ground and insisted on 1.25%. So the Senate Democrats insisted on something more than that. They had gone down to 2.6-something, but even that wasn't accepted. And so the alternative was one-time funding to fill in that gap.
Not only was the legislature 1 year late in producing a compromise on education spending, it went past its scheduled adjournment at the end of April this year, until leaders finally struck a deal early in June that would stick to the Republicans' desired 1.25% growth in education funding, but would add to that a one-time school spending package of $56 million, in part because Iowa revenue had shown significant growth. Iowa had paid its debts and filled its coffers in the previous months. The legislature adjourned on June 5th with a budget in place. The fiscal year started on July 1st. Then, on July 2nd, Governor Branstad got out his veto pen and killed the $56 million one-time spending. Here was Representative Wessel-Crichel's reaction.
I have to say I was shocked. The supplemental pay was actually 1.25% that we gave to Iowa schools. With that amount, we are anticipating that 1,000 teachers, we will have 1,000 fewer teachers in Iowa next year. And the almost $57 million that was vetoed by the governor was just a one-time spending allowance, although there is plenty of money to make that an ongoing expense. We are growing at 6% in the state. Our revenue is growing at 6%. We now have $1.07 billion in reserves, filling up all of our emergency funds. So to veto that money, which is so important to Iowa students and their education, was absolutely shocking to me. And I have to say I'm very concerned about the size of classrooms. You know, if we're going to lose 1,000 teachers, that increases class sizes. We're going to lose programming that's important to so many of our kids. And there is solid research to say that the class size makes a difference in how well kids do in school.
In a statement, Governor Branstad chided the legislature for getting behind on its required allocations. And in vetoing the measure, he stated that it was his responsibility to, quote, maintain stability and predictability in our state's budget. Again, Representative Wessel-Crichel.
Given that schools had started their budgets on July 1st for this year, and he vetoed it on July 2nd, means they did not have any predictability for setting their budgets.
Democratic legislators are not the only ones upset about this veto. A petition was posted and letters were written by teachers, school administrators, and parents asking Republican lawmakers to join Democrats in convening in a special session to overturn the veto. Based on reporting from the online journal Iowa Starting Line, among those calling for the veto was a Waterloo science teacher, Vaughn Gross, who sent an email out to Republican lawmakers explaining how he had spent $2,000 of his own money on classroom supplies, exactly the kind of nuts and bolts, curriculum and books expenditure the one-time grant was intended to cover. The response from one Iowa senator, David Johnson, from Northwest Iowa, was that Mr. Gross should, quote, quit whining about his financial woes as a teacher. Ryan Paulson, who teaches alongside Mr. Gross in Waterloo schools and is active in the Republican Party, jumped to his colleague's defense and wrote to Senator Johnson that he, too, appreciates the need for school reform. Again, according to Iowa Starting Line, Senator Johnson replied that true educational reform would not happen until the $6,000 per pupil in state-appropriated funding is, quote, stapled to every student's backpack and spent at the discretion of the parents. I asked Representative Wessel Crichel, did that statement surprise you?
Unfortunately, no. We hear rumblings of this kind of talk a lot in the legislature. It's very rarely made real public. Some of my opponents have actually promoted that philosophy that the money should follow the child. There are lots of problems with that. But the biggest one being it would absolutely destroy public education, which most of our children go to. And you don't have control over it if you just allow it to follow the child. It's going to go to specific institutions that will do what they want to with it. They wouldn't have to follow state regulations as far as what's being taught with that kind of program. We would lose a lot of our standards. But the most important thing is we would lose our most valued public schools, and where most of us, including me, I still send a kid to our public schools, and I can't imagine what Iowans would do when these just disintegrate.
And our public schools in Iowa are known for doing a very good job. I looked up some statistics that were 35th in terms of funding schools nationwide. We are always in the top five in terms of achievement standards.
For on very limited revenue, we do very well, which the Republicans will frequently point to that we don't need to fund our public schools because they do well without it. As that teacher that wrote to Senator Johnson said, he's put $2,000 of his own money into educating Iowa's kids. I also believe that teacher, what I've learned, is that he's only taught for 5 years. So that's $10,000 of his own money. That's a pretty significant commitment for a young man to make sure that his students are getting the best education possible.
Right. And you wonder how long someone chooses to make that kind of commitment.
That's right. It's a sacrifice to teach in Iowa when you have to give your that amount of your own money to make ends meet in the classroom.
The notion of a portable education voucher also speaks to the concern for predictability as well.
Well, certainly if the goal of Iowa Republicans is to send Iowa education money to homeschooling, to private institutions, or to wherever the child chooses to go, we lose all predictability on what Iowa schools can offer. And we know that there are so many programs that lose very quickly when Iowa schools have to start cutting. And the first one is usually the arts. Talented and gifted programs are always severely cut. And it's a challenge then for schools to meet the needs of all of their children. Senator Johnson made it clear what his goals are, and I think that's interesting. We have heard these as rumblings before. We've overheard them at forums when we hear people speaking to other people, but it's never been quite as publicly stated by a Republican, as far as I know, in the state as what Senator Johnson has stated. And it would be interesting to know what local Republicans think.
I also was curious to learn local Republicans' views of Governor Branstad's veto and education spending issues in general, and turned to Representative Dave Dio from Nevada to ask him his views on the veto and Senator Johnson's comments. Dave graciously welcomed me to his Nevada home. Here is my interview with Dave Dio, Republican representative from Nevada.
Dave Dio, when you were casting the final vote for a compromise education budget that would make a one-time grant to Iowa schools of $56 million, did you have any inkling that Branstad might line item veto it?
I hadn't thought about it at the time. As the session got over and I got to thinking about it later and the fact that the funding was in two different places, it did occur to me that he might veto it, or he could at any rate. I had actually told some people that I thought it might happen. Some other Republicans, one of them in particular said, no, I don't think that'll happen. And we often have understanding on both sides, Democrat, Republican, that the governor can do this sort of thing. I had language that I didn't particularly like that I voted for in my own economic development budget last year. And my Senate colleague told me, we'll go ahead and just vote for it. The governor will veto it anyways. And so there's some, understanding on both sides that it can happen. I got to say, though, the last day before session, I told some people I didn't think he would, because I'd seen a quote that sort of indicated to me that I didn't think he would veto that line. So it was a little bit of a surprise the day that it happened.
Back to your party's unwillingness to compromise on the 1.25% school funding increase, the supplemental. Why was it so important for Republicans to keep this school budget low when the state reported back in early May that revenues were up as much as 5.5% since last year?
Well, first of all, that percentage number has been thrown out, and that's misleading, because what happened was the revenues declined for the previous year. So what it made it look like there was a big increase in revenue for 16, when in fact the revenue estimates for 14 and 15 declined. And so the actual increase was much smaller than that. The actual dollar increase over what we had appropriated for the previous year was $181 million. And that was the total new money that we had available to us. And so we felt like a combination of the 1.25 plus the teacher leadership money, which the two of them together amounted to about $100 million. School funding is a little less than K through 12 is about 40% of the budget. We felt like they were getting over half of the new money. And so we thought that number was reasonable and was also doable and affordable and fit into the budget in a sustainable way.
Were you disappointed with the veto?
I've got mixed feelings. On one hand, there's been a concern for a while with the decline that we've seen in the ending balances that we've had. The surplus has been declining now for a couple of years. And a lot of that is because of declining revenue for 14, and we had projections for 15 declining, but now it looks like 15 came in, had a little bump in revenues at the end of the year, the last month or two. So it won't be as much of a decline as we thought. So the veto, what that does is it'll actually provide more money in ending balance in surplus when we get to the end of the next fiscal year. As far as school funding, I think that the coming year will be easier than this year was for a number of reasons. We did see that little bump in revenues at the end of the year. That's a hopeful sign. We had some built-in things that created problems for us this past year that I don't think will be as bad this next year. Hopefully Medicaid, we've got that under control, I hope. The cost of Medicaid has been going up extremely fast compared to the rest of the budget, and it's eating up everything else. A lot of it is because the federal government has been giving us a smaller reimbursement. So every time a doctor sends in a bill, it used to be it was over 60% federal match that we received. Now that match is under 55%. We think that trend is hopefully going to start changing. There's been a lot of talk about the property tax reform. Residential property is taxed at close to half of its value, or a little over half of its value. But property taxes for commercial entities have been close to 100% for years. The reform dropped that down to 90% in two different years. So 95 one year and then 90 the next year. So there was a backfill that was spending that we had agreed to, that we would go ahead and spend that money to local governments so local governments weren't hurt by that that lower, you know, property tax revenues. That was built in already. We've already funded the second one, so that once we get to next year's budget, we won't have that increase next year, so that will help a lot. And we're the teacher leadership program. We have one more year to fund that, and then it sort of flattens out too. So there's a number of things coming ahead that I think will make it a little easier to fund the education line item.
So next year, you hope to complete a two-year budget for education?
Well, we'll see. We've had every year since we've had split control of the Senate and the House, we've had difficulty doing this with the Senate and the House. And keep in mind that this split control, where the Senate's controlled by one party and the House is controlled by another, had not occurred for many, many years prior to this, I think since the early 90s. And it just doesn't work very good to try and come up with a number because Senate Democrats always want to play games with it. They started out last year at 6%, even though they had no clue that we had enough money to cover that, and we didn't. They got at the beginning of the year, and they said, okay, how about 4%? They knew all along where our bottom line for the entire budget was going to be, and we knew what the revenue estimate was in December. They knew how much money that we would be willing to spend in the entire budget for everything. So trying to get funding for education fit into that, it went on just way longer than it should have. We should have been able to come up with the agreement, you know, back in January easily.
Okay, on to this controversy. Republican Iowa Senator David Johnson stated in an email that he has that has been made public now that, quote, true education reform won't happen until the $6,000 per student in state-appropriated funds is, quote, stapled to the child's backpack and spent at the discretion of the parents. Some are saying that the Republicans' real education agenda has been revealed. Is this the Republicans' position on education?
I think probably every Republican legislator has different ideas on what the best kind of education reform would be. I've heard a couple of Republican senators talk about this idea. I don't recall that we've even had a bill in the House that it's an interesting idea, I guess. It'd be total parental control, I guess. You know, parents could choose where they wanted to send their kids, send it to the local public school or homeschool or whatever they wanted to do with that money. It'd be like a scholarship.
If it were homeschool, you'd be essentially paying the parents to keep the kids out of school.
Well, in essence, it would be an incentive. That's why I think $6,000 is more than it would be needed. I know the state of Texas has done something like this, but I think their number may have been $2,000 or $3,000 or something like that. I don't remember the exact number, but it was much smaller than the amount that the state of Texas actually spent on public school kids. The advantage for Texas has been that they have exploding enrollment at their schools. They had a huge problem with schools that were having to, you know, build on and expand and that sort of thing. They were able to do this, keep some of the kids out of the public schools, and then actually turn around and spend more money on public school students for each public school student, because it saved so much money for districts that were having to struggle with growing pains.
Whereas in Iowa, we have the opposite problem in many districts.
Generally, that's true, yes. Yeah.
So finally, a different take on this budget controversy. You're the chair of the House Economic Development Budget Committee. Mm-hmm. So Branstad, at the same time that he was vetoing this $56 million in funding for public schools, was granting $25 million to a foreign fertilizer company in the name of economic development to the tune of a promise for 11 jobs. Do you support Branstad's grant of that $25 million to the fertilizer company? Do you think it's more important than Iowa schools?
Let me change directions for just a second. You know, we talked about education funding and how education was only getting a 1.25% increase. But I wanted to mention while I was here that the budget that I have, we had to actually cut funding to that budget because of to try and fit the education increase into the rest of the budget.
So the economic development budget you had to cut to fit education in.
Yes, we did cut it, and we also had to cut some budgets like human services and some, you know, basically every other budget area of the chair, of all the budget chairs. Each one of us had to find savings and cuts in our budgets. Anyway, to get back to your question of the on the fertilizer plant, this was part of the agreement that was made when they originally signed the contracts. Was that this increase that they asked for was something that they were allowed to ask for earlier on as part of the original agreement. Keep in mind that the tax credits are not all claimed. They have to show a profit and have income, actual income tax liability before they get any money from the state. So in other words, this fertilizer plant, if they were to not open for some reason or if they were to not make a profit, there would be no cost to the state at all. That's the way these property tax credits work.
Would you participate in any effort to overturn the governor's veto?
Well, it's kind of irrelevant because you've got 23 or 24 Senate Republicans that voted no on the entire budget. They voted no on this one. I see no scenario where they would ever want to come back in and switch their vote and turn around and vote yes on that budget. You know, from my perspective, I voted for it, for the compromise as part of the House. You know, it was something we had to do to get the session over with and get it done. And, you know, it would be something I would have to look at, but it's not going to happen because the Senate Republicans would have no reason to want to come back.
Okay. Thank you for your time today.
You're welcome.
And that was Dave Dio, representative from Nevada, a Republican, talking about Iowa Governor Branstad's unexpected veto of the $56 million one-time spending package on education. And he also spoke of the various commitments that compete with education in Iowa's state budget. Dio mentioned the Teacher Leadership Program. It is a $50 million a year commitment put into place by Branstad's 2013 education reform package. It trains Iowa's teachers to take on extra responsibilities and lead their peers. I have received an offer from Herman Kernbach, the Iowa senator from Ames, a member of the Education Committee. He's offered to come on to KHOI and help us crunch the education numbers and explain why his committee stands by the original 6% funding increase that they proposed. So we have that to look forward to in the coming weeks. Stay tuned for KHOI's celebration of the first annual Harrison Barnes Day today.
Summer. fell in love with the drummer. She fell in love with another. She fell in love. I miss the innocence I've known. Playing kiss colors, beautiful and stone.
Was a song from the latest album, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, by Wilco, one of the headliners of the 8035 show that occurred this past weekend in Des Moines. This is Local Talk on KHOI Radio. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, and the studio has just gotten packed with folks eager to celebrate the first annual Harrison Barnes Day, proclaimed by Mayor Ann Campbell to recognize our own hometown Ames High School basketball player, now a professional athlete with the Golden State Warriors in Oakland, California. Harrison will be making appearances at various events around Ames today and presumably every July 13th until he moves on. So this is a landmark moment, and KHOI radio hosts and sports reporters Vivica Dillard and Merle Crabb are here to join us for the occasion. Viv and Merle have back-to-back Saturday night shows, The Hot Spot with Vivica at 8 and Merle on the Move at 9, and where they play hip-hop music, talk about topics that are important to them, and that more than often leads to discussions of basketball. Am I right, guys?
This is true.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we do. I do. I start off with sports, actually.
And me, whatever's hot. Whatever is the hottest that day.
We've got a hot spot in the room right now. Why don't you start us off and tell us what Harrison Barnes has been up to in this early summer?
Well, just this past June, Harrison and the Golden State Warriors defeated the Cleveland Cavaliers in the best of a seven series to win the 2015 National Basketball Association Championship. And we are thrilled to welcome Harrison to KHOI. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That's what's up. Since you're one of us here in Ames, let's start off talking about growing up here, my man. What's some of your memories when you think about the past here in Ames?
Man, my memories growing up here definitely started off with, you know, shooting hoops at Rosewood Elementary. Back when they had the court out there, spent a lot of time just with kids in my neighborhood going there hooping, going to Happy Joe's. I know that they don't have that anymore, but one of my high school teammates, his uncle used to own that. So,
okay, that's what's up.
You know, we used to go there a lot, and then obviously good old Hickory Park.
Hickory Park, the barbecue. Got to love the barbecue, Hickory Park. You went to, I know one of the guys you played with, Monty Robinson.
Yep.
Yeah, you played ball with him.
Good dude, man.
I know that you came up through the AAU, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I seen you on the cover of the Parks and Rec magazine, too, also, a couple years ago. I've been following you for a minute, my man.
Yeah.
So do you think that you honed your skills through the AAU, or just how did you get to be the way you are? Because, I mean, you're a superstar, and you got there pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, AAU definitely helped me a lot. I mean, I used to always, when I was like in the 7th and 8th grade, I'd always play up with the, you know, 16 and unders, 17 and unders, just to push me. I mean, because those were the, you know, older guys, bigger guys, and they'd kind of, you know, rough me up and You know, I had to take my lumps and my bruises, but, you know, that pushed me to become a better player.
Right, right. I understand that. Now, are you an ambassador for the NBA, or what other committees are you involved with through the NBA?
Well, I mean, just kind of playing makes you an ambassador. But, you know, off the court, you know, I'm on the board of directors at the Boys and Girls Club in Oakland.
That's what's up. Do you have any camps or any organizations that or committees that you deal with around here locally here in Ames?
I have a reading academy with Raising Readers in the Ames Public Library. So that's kind of, you know, the big focus that I do throughout the year. And then, you know, I try to do stuff as well with the Boys and Girls Club.
Okay. Now, when you say that the reading thing, now, is that something that you came up with yourself, or did they approach you with that?
No, I do a different version of that in Oakland for kids, you know, come okay. to basketball games and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I kind of obviously want to do something back home. So the idea behind the Reading Academy is that, you know, kids come there and it's not just a, okay, you read 10 books and you leave, but they actually have, Raising Readers actually has a group of students and teachers that actually help kids get, who are behind the, you know, normal reading levels, get up to par.
All right.
Yeah, I actually am a tutor in that program.
Nice. So, I thank you.
Yeah, and I can say that having your name, lending your name to that effort really makes a difference. It really makes, you know, this kind of reading enrichment cool, and you know, it's just a really great asset.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, education is obviously very important to me, and, you know, I had to, you know, I had to have a lot of tutors and stuff growing up, so to be able to, you know, give back now, and I'm actually going to see those kids at, like, noon.
Today, huh?
Yeah, it's good.
Cool. Now, you were here for the 4th of July. Were you, like, the marshal for the 4th of July parade?
Yeah, the grand marshal.
Oh, that's pretty cool, man. How'd you like that?
Ooh, I had
you had the trophy with you, right?
I did have the trophy.
Is that the actual trophy?
The actual one, solid gold.
Wow. That's awesome, man. I wish I could see that one, man. That's beautiful. I mean, to be able to get to where you got to so fast, being from here, and you got to bring the trophy back here, that is awesome, my man.
Was there like an insurance policy on that? I mean,
it has its own security detail.
Yeah, the black suits follows the trophy.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here, and this is the official Harrison Barnes Day. I've been real excited to see you. I actually follow you on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yeah, nice. I say on Twitter too. I follow you on Twitter. I've been following you since before. You know, my daughter played. She was cheerleader when you played school, played ball over there with old Dougie Fresh.
Oh, yeah.
You still keep in touch with Dougie Fresh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the NBA, you know, it's close family, and you know, I always check up on him. Obviously, I know this year didn't go, you know, kind of the way he wanted, but you know, I'm pretty sure he's gonna have a fresh start next year, and. You know, his coach is pretty good, too.
Yeah, man. That's what's up, man. I like I said, I appreciate you coming through, and you're doing big things, you know. The same thing that what you're doing with your programs, what community radio is about, you know, which awareness, information, you know. Same thing I try to do on my show, Merle on the Move. I try to play good hip-hop and leave a message, mm-hmm. you know. And the same thing I think Via tries to do on her show. So I'm glad to have you here today. Anything you want to ask Harrison real quick, Viv?
No, that's about it. You covered the good stuff. There we go.
Well, see, that's what I'm going to get the roots. You know, Viv going to hit you with the NBA questions. You know uh-huh. what I'm saying? I do the NBA thing. But I wanted to know about you coming from here, because that's what's so cool about being in Ames. You know, I tell people. I say, you know, I say I'm living in Ames. I say, you know, that's where Harrison Barnes is from.
Oh, yeah, you got to have
I dropped you all the time, man. I'm like, yeah, I got him in school with him, too, by the way.
I appreciate that.
Harrison, I was curious, you know, for Ames, calling this Harrison Barnes Day, mm-hmm. this is, you know, it's a very proud thing for Ames to have somebody from our town do really well. And I was curious, how is it from your perspective, Harrison Barnes Day? How does that look to you? What does it mean to you?
I mean, first and foremost, I mean, it's, you know, it's a real honor, to, you know, have a day named after you and, you know, to kind of have the celebration, but, you know, in all honesty, you know, the attention is a little, it can be a little much at times, just because, you know, I didn't get here by myself. You know, I had a, you know, a lot of people, you know, that were behind me that helped me get here. And, you know, this community really kind of helped me get here. Just from whether it was, you know, people at restaurants, people, you know, who I was friends with, teachers that I had, coaches that I had, you know, a lot of those people all came from here. So, you know, this is kind of a, it's a group effort, but, and it should be a celebration for the city, but I just happened to be the the name on the day.
And it came full circle. You know what I'm saying? You went out there and paid your dues, and now the city welcomes you with open arms. You know what I mean? And that's beautiful. You know?
And I always appreciate the love.
That's what's up. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOR Community Radio. We are your hosts, Merle Crabb and Vivica Diller. We are here with none other than our own hometown hero, Harrison Barnes, who grew up here in Ames and is now an NBA Finals champion. My man was putting in work.
With that, like, how does that feel to be known as an NBA champion?
I mean, that's the, you know, other than Olympic gold medal, I mean, that's the highest, you know, the highest acclaim that you can have in our sport. So it's definitely a dream come true.
Yeah. So when it came time for it, game six, countdown, 10 seconds, did you think you guys were going to win beforehand?
Yeah, I think there was a foul. One of my teammates got fouled with like 8 seconds on the clock. You mm-hmm. know, game was pretty much over. And, you know, we're trying not to get too excited. You know, like, man, you know, is it? I mean, the season's finally over. You know, it was a long journey from, you know, beginning of September to, you know, all the way to June. And mm-hmm. kind of sitting there, you really don't know what to think. And then that buzzer goes off and dudes are throwing the ball up and
look
jumping.
Look at him, he's glowing just talking about it.
Man, it was a crazy night. It was a crazy night.
Yeah. The locker room, so it was crazy. I could tell from the videos in the locker room.
Yeah.
It went down.
Yeah. I walked in and I'd never been around that much alcohol before in my life. It was just like they had endless champagne. They were just rolling in. And I walk in and I have my eyes open, and then they just all were burning. I mean, yeah. As soon as that champagne hit, my eyes were burning. So the goggles were needed?
You guys needed the goggles?
For sure. I was trying to look around, looking for the goggles. They're like, oh, get some goggles in the back. Finally put them on. I was able to see, but it was wild.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about that, all that alcohol in a second. But, okay, 7 games in the finals. You won in 6. So let's talk about game 5. Mm-hmm. Many people, myself included, think that was one of your best performances in the finals. You had 8 points, 10 rebounds. Could you describe, walk us through that game, just that whole experience?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, coming back with the series tied 2-2, you know, that was a huge game for us. I mean, we did not want to go back to Cleveland down 3-2. Mm-hmm. That was just not possible for us. So we all kind of banded together and were like, look, you know, this is going to be an ugly game. But, you know, we got to get through it. And I got into some early foul trouble. So, you know, guy kind of took me out of my rhythm. But, you know, when Coach put me back in at the end of the second quarter, when I got that bang out on LeBron, I mean, that was kind of, you know, what kind of got me going for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
You dunked on LeBron James. I just want to reiterate that. You dunked on LeBron James. How does that?
Yeah, that definitely goes down as one of my favorite NBA moments.
It has to be. At this point, it has to be. Like, dunked on LeBron. Won NBA championship. Like, so you also, you caught two more bodies that same game. Mm-hmm. Mike Miller and Timofey Mozgov. So that was a putback. So
that was crazy. I didn't even know it was going to happen. I remember Sean just hit me with the pass down the middle. And I just, you know, I took a drop step and I just went up. And, you know, I can't palm a ball with my left hand. That's, you know.
You can't?
Nah. I really, it's hard for me to palm with my right. So I just kind of went up and I saw, you know, Timofey jump, and I was just like,
he was like, oh yeah.
I was like, I got to try to just finish at the rim. You know, I wasn't thinking like, oh, it would make a poster dunk right here. I'm just like, it's probably going to get blocked. I'm going to try to finish at the rim. And then it just happened. And I was like, wow. I was like, I was in shock. People were like, man, you didn't jump around. I was like, cause I was shocked. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that you jumped on two people. And you just look so calm. You got the foul, just walked straight to the line. Like, how are you able to just stay so calm during stuff like that?
I mean, you know, people act like, you know, like when you go up and dunk, it's like you're just floating in the air. Like, you see the play coming. Like, it happens so quick. So it's like, you know, from the time I jumped to when I finished, it was like, wow, okay, that was
kind of cool. Like,
that's why I wasn't like, I didn't have any reactions. I was just sitting there kind of like, wow, okay. Is that one?
Yeah. Is that how you go about it? Because I remember seeing you, like, back in high school. Like, I've never, in college, anything, maybe I could probably count, like, 3 plays all from all the years, like, high school, college, and NBA, where you just, like, just went crazy after a play.
Yeah, I got that from Coach Downs, my high school coach.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of, you know, act like you've been there before. That was his big thing. And he was, you know, strictly business. He was definitely not with the showboating. I learned that, you know, as a freshman playing at varsity when I do something well. So That's one of the things he passed on to me, was just always just kind of act like he'd been there before.
Yeah. Okay. Well, your mother, she was able to make it to every game.
She was.
Throughout the finals. What was it like having her there?
I mean, it was special. Just because, like, when you get to, you know, when you get to the finals and, you know, you start hearing all the stuff, like, you know, wow, you know, I played 18 years in the league, or I played 20 years in the league, or whatever, and, you know, I never won a championship. I never made it to the finals. So it was like, you look, you know, win or lose, we may never get this experience again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just for them to be there the entire time, you know, that was really special.
So it was your mom and your sister?
Mom and my sister, yep.
That's cool. So I saw, real quick, I saw on Snapchat, you came back home, you took over NBA Snapchat. You still sleep in the same bed? Like, did she have to remodel? Because you grew a little bit since last time you lived at home.
I did grow. I don't sleep in the same bed. I actually went through a couple beds when I was growing up just because I grew. But the one I last had, I'm a little too big for that one.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're not a little guy.
No, the ceiling's a little lower in my house, too. I didn't notice that until...
So you have to walk in like this?
Yeah, I'm like, man, these bathroom doors, kitchen doors, small.
Yeah. It's time for some remodeling now. That's what that means.
Yeah. My mom and sister are adamant about letting me know that. They're big HGTV fans.
Yeah. So this past season, your team, you guys lost David Lee mm-hmm. in a trade. So he played really well during the playoffs. How do you feel about that trade?
You know, it's really tough just because, you know, he was, you know, one of my vets, you know, when I very first came into the league. And, you know, he actually came to Golden State before it was, you know, Golden State.
Yeah.
I mean, he came 5 years ago. And, you know, they were winning, you know, 15 games. And, mm-hmm. and he was really, you know, the first free agent to sign there. So he was part of this whole process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, although it was, you know, really sad that he went, I was glad that he was able to go out a champion just because, you know, he was – pretty much here when this thing started, him and Steph, the, you know, the longest mm-hmm. members from that team. And to kind of see that way, to see it all the way through, all the sacrifice he made, it was only right that, you know, he got a championship on his way out.
I liked him. He definitely stepped up during the playoffs, like no other. So, okay, the fun part. Celebration at Oakland. Now, I heard them say, I can't remember what teammate it was during an interview. That was your first time. You had never drank before.
That was correct.
You had never drank before, seriously. Even the night you got drafted or?
Oh, the night I got drafted was a blur, so definitely not that night.
Okay. Okay, so minus that night. Mm-hmm. So that was the first time you drank after you guys got in the locker room. Mm-hmm. How was the celebration when you guys got back to Oakland?
Whew, I mean, we landed, and I mean, there was already, you know, employees and stuff like waiting outside. There was like a waiting area outside the airport right when the plane landed. So, it was just... It was nuts. And then the parade, you know, I'd never been a part of something that just obnoxiously out of control. That was just unbelievable. I can't even put it into words, but it was unbelievable.
Draymond, he handled it pretty well.
He was definitely the calm head to, you know, relax everybody throughout the entire process.
He seems fun. Is Riley really that cute in person?
Oh, for sure. She's got a ton of personality. And, I mean, what you see on TV is exactly how she is. I mean, she doesn't change.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Riley is Steph Curry's daughter. He's the MVP starting guard for the Warriors. But with that being said, I have one more question for you.
Shoot.
Who's your favorite teammate?
My favorite teammate? Man. Wow. I mean, we're like a really close-knit team. So, I mean, it could be Leandro Barbosa. It could be Justin Holiday, McAdoo, Bogut. I mean, it's, you know, we're a really tight group. So it's hard to say, like, there's one guy who I'm like, that's my guy, because we're all really close.
That's cool. Anybody else?
I do. This is I have a show, Merlin the Move, which I want you to check out. Mm-hmm. All right. Saturday nights. You can listen to it anytime.
I got you.
But we do hip-hop. So speaking of hip-hop, who you listening to right now?
Man,
that new Meek Mill just came out, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of his best works. Just because, you know, his first couple albums, they kind of sounded the same. It was kind of like, you know, what's your growth going to be from here? Mm-hmm. And, like, it's good to kind of see him, you know, slow down the beat, kind of hear him rapping, kind of hear him dropping, you know, a little knowledge. So I was like, you know, I was impressed by that, but... I still think the album of the year, or the best album to come out recently, was Kendrick's.
That Kendrick. A lot of people don't understand that Kendrick. It's a little different, but I see where it's going, and you have to be different. That's what's going to make you great. And I totally agree with the way you described Meek's thing, his style, because he was known to be like yelling and all over the track. And on this one, totally different on this one, man. And you got a good ear for music, so that's what's up, man.
I appreciate that.
No Future? Not listening to No Future?
Oh, July 17th, I got that one circled. You know, Future always come out with straight bangers.
There you go. Yeah. But
ain't been a hook since probably 07 that ain't had Chris Brown, Future, Drake on it.
That's true.
Very true.
So. Harrison, can you tell us what you're going to be up to today? You mentioned the reading group with the kids at noon. What else are you doing today?
I have a surprise visit somewhere. I'm going to go shoot some hoops. I can't say where that is yet because I don't want people to be prepared for that. I am going to City Hall. But, I just be going around just, to a lot of my favorite spots, just doing, just pop-ins. Not trying to really broadcast necessarily too much of where I'm going. Kind of want it to be a surprise, but just going to be making my way around Ames.
And we know that you'll be signing autographs at some time. That is publicized.
Yeah, 4:30 to 6:30 at Ames High.
All right.
Anything that we didn't ask that you want to talk about? This is community radio, so this is really where, the community talks to itself, and you're an important part of our community. What else would you like to say while you are here with us in the studio?
I'm just really happy to see the development of Ames lately. Obviously, the Ames Public Library is, added on immensely. Seeing the water park, that's been built. Although, it's a few years ago, I only come back in the summer, so I see the rapid growth.
Right.
And just kind of see how, Ames is developing. It's just really nice to see that. As I've always thought, it's, been a progressive place and, a place that tries to do things the right way. So to see it, growing the way it is, I like it.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We have Merle Crabb and Vivica Dillard, and we're here with Harrison Barnes, National Basketball Association champion, who grew up in Ames. Today, July 13th, is the first annual Harrison Barnes Day.
And at 8:30 a.m., there will be a presentation in the City Hall Council Chambers. You are invited to attend. And at the end of the day, from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m., he will be signing autographs at the Ames High School cafeteria. You are welcome to come by, but be sure to arrive at the high school prior to 6:15 p.m. Again, Harrison will be signing autographs at the Ames High School cafeteria today from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m.
Oh, and again, we want to thank you. KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM. Don't forget that. We want to thank you for coming in, for even just taking time to starting your day, Harrison Barnes Day, starting it off here with us. We appreciate that. And since it is your day, you get the last word.
I appreciate you guys having me, and I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your day.
All right.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson, with Vivica Dillard and Merle Crabb. Gail Seiler and Ursula Rudenberg helped produce the show. And our engineer was Joan Updegeese. He's an intern now and doing a great job. We started the show with a phonology on Red Admiral Butterflies with nature correspondent Pat Schlarbaum. And we then explored Governor Branstad's education veto with local Democrat and Republican members of the Iowa House, Beth Wassell-Crichel and Dave Dio.
And then we welcomed Harrison Barnes to our house, KHOI Studios, here at 410 Douglas. I'm the station manager, Ursula Rudenberg, and thank you so much for coming, Harrison. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
If you like this show, tell your friends. Tell your children and grandchildren, too. You are here for the start of what we hope will be a fun and inspiring tradition for Ames. This show will be posted on our website, khoifm.org, so you can catch what you missed, listen again, and share it on social media.
And this is the kind of excitement you can be part of in community radio. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a radio show. And if you would like to join the reporting team, you are welcome. And Harrison, you are invited to join our team, too, if you would like to join our family. We'd love to have you part of the family.
Thank you.
As always, your role as listener and your generous donations are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.